Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to the Iran Brook Show. I hope you guys are all doing well. Been a crazy week out there. We just got the shooting last few days in Dallas. 5 policemen down. I think 11 people injured. One individual, basically execution style, going around shooting people. Scary stuff. Scary stuff. At the same time, part of this was clearly instigated by 2 police shootings, one in Minnesota and one in New Orleans, where policemen shot dead black men who were carrying guns, but it doesn't look like they were drawing the guns. It's hard to tell exactly what happened in both cases. We'll have to wait for all the evidence to come forward. But this has reignited the whole debate, and this debate just seems to be ongoing, about police shootings, about police violence, and about violence against police. Is there indeed a war on police? It certainly seemed so in Dallas. Clearly, the shooter was targeting policemen. The shooter was. Has been quoted as saying that he wanted to kill white people, and in particular, white policemen. And at least it seems that this is making it worse, exacerbating the kind of racial tensions that seem to exist in America today at a rate that maybe we haven't seen in a very long time. And it raises a lot of questions. Some of those questions are just factual questions, just data questions. Is police violence on the rise? Is police violence disproportionately targeted at blacks? Is there a war on police in the sense that is violence against the police on the rise? And if so, if it is, why? And why does it, if it isn't, then why does it seem like it is? That is, why is it being reported nonstop? What is the Black Lives Matter movement, and to what extent is it responsible for a lot of what's going on, for the violence out there, for the rise in racism, and indeed, what is the cause of this racism, and where does it originate? You know, why? Aren't we in a post, as Obama I think once said, in a post-racist environment, in a post-racial world? What is keeping racism alive in America today, and how do we ultimately get rid of it? Because I there's no doubt in my mind there's racism out there in all directions. Obviously, one would argue that the killer of the Dallas police was clearly a racist. All right, so this is what we're going to talk about today. We'll probably get to some other topics as well. It depends on what's going on. So those of you in the chat who would like me to talk about something else, tough. Just disconnect if this isn't a topic you're interested in. All right, we're talking about police violence, violence against police, racism more broadly. Heavy topic, difficult topic. But we need to plunge into it and seriously, not a very PC topic, not a topic that is going to be consistent with a lot of PC stuff. I don't like talking about race. I hate talking about race. I hate making racial distinctions. I don't think it's very usually very useful. I think it's a, when we overdo it, I think it's a sign of clear racism. But something is going on here, and you have to be able to talk about it, and you have to be able to discuss it and debate it. And this Dallas shooting, probably I think one of the worst attacks on police in American history, I think is definitely worth discussing. All right, if you want in on the conversation, I'm definitely interested in what you have to say. 347-324-3075, 347-324-3075. Press 1 once you're dialed in, and once you're connected, press 1 in order for me to know that you're dialing in, not just to listen to the show, but actually have a question or comment or would like to discuss this issue. I'm limiting the calls. Hopefully we can limit the calls to, at least in the first half of the show, two issues related to the Dallas shooting, or to the shoot, or to Black Lives Matter, or to the shooting of the blacks in Minnesota, New Orleans, and the general phenomena, of police shooting blacks. All right. So on topic, stay on topic. Call up. We've got phone lines, 347-324-3075. So let's start to unpackage this, because there's a lot kind of going on here, and there's a lot of misinformation in my view, and there's a lot of panic and hysteria. Although one can understand kind of the panic and hysteria after kind of an event like Dallas, but if we try to be objective, try to look at fact, I think that is always helpful. And it is always helpful to analyze what's really going on, to analyze where we are as a country, and to analyze what our response should actually be. Now, this is unfortunately, to a large extent, even when it comes to the data and when it comes to the facts, become a left versus right kind of thing, where there seems to be different people on different sides of this issue pushing agendas and trying to advocate for particular statistics in order to argue for their claim. And it's really hard. It's really hard to know what is actually going on, because it's hard to figure out what the statistics really are and what the data really is. Nobody really keeps track of particularly of police shootings. Nobody keeps track in a detailed way of police shootings. There's a lack of statistics. There's a horrific lack of statistics on these kind of things, on police shootings and why they shoot. And so let's discuss the police a little bit and why I think it's important that we be vigilant in how we approach police. The police, you know, obviously, as all of you know, I'm not an anarchist. I believe strongly that we need a government. I believe strongly we need a police. I believe strongly that police is a function of government, and that police are there to protect us, to protect our rights, that right to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness. And the police are, in that sense, in that capacity, the good guys. They're supposed to be there to protect us. That is their job. And much of what they do indeed involves protecting us, from crooks and criminals and murderers and rapists and muggers and so on. And on top of that, you could argue that over the last, 30 years, in spite of since 1990, so that's really already 36 years, that over the last 36 years, crime has come down dramatically in the United States. I mean, dramatically, particularly violent crime has come down significantly. And we've seen a small bump up last year and this year, particularly in cities. But even when you take that bump up over the last couple of years, over the last year and a half, it's still, by historical standards, by the standards of certainly 30 years ago, the period of the 1970s, 80s, crime is down dramatically. So the job of the police is to protect our rights. It's to follow the law, but of course the law is there to protect our rights. So ultimately, their job is to protect our rights. to protect us from crime. And crime, by almost every definition one wants, has been in dramatic decline over the last 30 years. In spite of all the pessimism, in spite of all the everybody being downbeat, in spite of the fact that we hear about horrific shootings in places like Chicago and other cities, crime is dramatically down in the United States, and nobody knows exactly why. Now, most of that decline, I'd point out, happened during the 1990s. And there are a lot of theories about why. Aging population, fewer young people is one explanation given, although there's some people who challenge that based on there are more young people today, but yet there isn't as much crime. Changing attitudes towards crime, different forms of policing doing a better job doing that police. Community policing, putting more police on the streets, much more police engagement in communities, which was a change in attitude about policing that happened in the late 80s, early 90s, particularly in New York City. New York City homicide rates are down 85%. Imagine 100, now it's 15. 85%. Over the last 30 years. I think 1990 or 1992 were the peak years in homicides in New York City. I think 2014 was a bottom, something like that. You know, 85%, that's something to be celebrated. That's an amazing number. Still too high. Still way too many people dying from homicide in New York. But 85% homicide rates decline in New York City. I mean, I remember the days where you were afraid to walk in New York City at night. You were afraid to go to Central Park, sometimes even during the day in some parts of the park. Today, there's really, you know, New York City appears to be an amazingly safe place. So something clearly has happened, and you have to give police a lot of credit for doing that. And this is in spite of a horrific war on drugs that is probably responsible for much of the crime, particularly the violent crime that is still out there. And yet crime is down. Now, again, there are lots of explanations. Better policing, younger average population, mass incarceration, lots of people in jail. Now, again, there are very mixed opinions about whether that is really the case. And indeed, I've seen some statistics that since California has reduced the number of people in jail and released a lot of people from jail, crime has not spiked up in spite of everybody's warnings that it will, in spite of the panic that supposedly it will. So, but that's been used as an explanation. But nobody really knows. I haven't seen a definitive study about this. Generally, crime is down worldwide. If you look at murder, death, wars, even in spite of everything going on in the Middle East, in spite of terrorism, it's been a 300-year, 400-year phenomena of violence declining among human beings, in spite of the world wars, in spite of everything. Generally, per capita crime is in significant, massive decline as worldwide the value of individual life has increased. The value of individual life in many, many countries, maybe in most countries, has increased. People respect human life more today than they did 300, 400 years ago. And on a global scale, individual life is much more respected today than it was 30, 40, 50, 100 years ago. So there's a general trend against crime. And maybe the aberration was the massive increase in crime in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And one could argue that was partially a result of the war on drugs, suddenly the United States started focusing dramatically on the war on drugs starting in the early 70s, and that helped raise crime dramatically. You see the same thing during Prohibition. During Prohibition, there was a massive increase in crime. Anyway, so those of you interested in the crime statistics, not only 300 years ago, but how today people estimate violent crime statistics 10,000 years ago, I would recommend a book called The Better Angels of Our Nature. The Better Angel. I'm going to look it up in a second. Let's see if I can quickly pull out Amazon and look it up. But it is, particularly the first few chapters of the book, I found amazingly. The Better Angels of Our Nature. It is, here it is. It's coming by Steven Pinker, The Better Angels of Our Nature. I found, I couldn't finish the book, I have to say. I thought his explanations towards the end were rambling. But I found the historical evidence, you might quibble with some of the statistics and some of the methodology, but the general trend, there's no question. And he documents it really, really well. And you can see it, you can also see it from the fact that, 400 years ago, violence was celebrated. There were executions in which torture sessions, public torture sessions, public executions in which people celebrated violence, and that doesn't happen today. So the book is called The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. It was written by, published in 2011, and the author is Steven Pinker. And I would highly recommend that for everybody to read, again, particularly the first few chapters, which document the history. Okay, so crime is down. I think we have to, that is just a fact. That's an empirical fact. You can look it up online. There's tons of evidence. And even though crime seems to be trending up right now, it doesn't come anywhere close to its peaks. And plus, we don't know it's a trend. It's 1 year. Last year, it's a one-year phenomena, so we don't know it's a trend. Okay, so that's generally crime. I want to talk about crime against police. I want to then talk about police shootings and whether they shoot blacks more than whites and things like that. I want to try to break this up. Let's get some facts on the table before we can even discuss causes and before we can even discuss assessment. But two things so far, I think, hopefully, I've at least established. One, police are there to defend our rights. And we'll talk about what happens when they're not defending our rights, when they're doing all kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing, and how that exacerbates the kind of tensions and the kind of distortions of policing and I think corrupts the whole police process. But we'll get to that. I'm going to take a couple of calls, and then we'll get to that. Then I want to talk about So the two facts were what policing is for, and the second fact is crime generally in the United States has come down, dramatically come down, right? Okay, we got a few calls here, so let me start at the top. Let's see if I can get there. All right, here we go. Hi, you're on the Iran Book Show. Who's this?
Hey, Ron, this is Corey. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you, Corey?
Not bad. Hey, so I'm calling to comment on the Minnesota shooting. So
sure,
I know
sure,
a little
ahead.
Bit about this. So the guy who got shot up here, he got pulled over for a broken taillight.
Yep.
And he informed the officer, and this is, I don't know the whole story. I'm still getting facts in. But he informed the officer that he had a concealed weapon or a concealed handgun. And after the officer asked him for his license and ID registration, whatever, he said, hey, by the way, I am a permit holder, concealed carry, and so I don't know exactly, but apparently what happened is he started to reach for his wallet to get his information, but the cop thought he was reaching for a gun and shot him. Now that's as far as much as I know. I don't know if we haven't, the whole truth hasn't come out. We don't know the full story, but there is some video. There's some video, the video that is shown, I don't know if you've seen much of it or not, but it shows after the stop. It doesn't show.
Yeah, it's right it's after the shooting, right?
Well, where the wife or the girlfriend is holding the camera, the phone, and she's kind of doing a selfie with it, and then she pans over, and the guy's laying there. So we don't know a whole lot about it. But here's my point, and I said this on Facebook to some, I'm like, we have too many laws in this country where, you got a broken taillight that can lead to death. So it's like every law, whether it's a law against spitting on the sidewalk, is eventually going to result in somebody's death. It has to. It's a law of probability.
Yep.
So too many laws, too many police. And, like you said, just defend our rights, defend against force from others, you know. And if I was a cop, I wouldn't last very long because I wouldn't enforce hardly anything. If it wasn't a, if it was a victimless crime, I wouldn't be doing anything, you know.
It would be very difficult.
Smoke pot all you want. Difficult.
Yeah.
So it's,
no,
it's,
I think you're right. I think that there are way too many laws. I don't know that there are too many police. It's hard to tell. You know, if we really wanted to live in a peaceful world completely, maybe we'd need more police. I don't know. That's an open question. But clearly too many laws are out there. Too many traffic laws are used to raise revenue for the locality, for the city, rather than to actually, you know, use to protect our safety to the extent that that even needs to exist. But if we had private laws, if we had private roads, we'd have some enforcement, but probably by, you know, other means. But yeah, but we also have to, you know, this is the world we live in, right? We live with a lot of laws. And so I do think we need to scrutinize police quite carefully. And from what you've told me, from what I've seen, from what I've talked, from what I've read online, it does seem like excessive use was used here, that he did let the policeman know that he was wearing, that he was carrying a weapon, that he did tell him he was reaching for a wallet, and the policeman overreacted. Now, why did he overreact? Because he's a racist? I don't know. The policeman who did the shooting was Hispanic, but who knows? Because
I think one of the things could be he might have been a younger guy. I don't know this for sure.
Well, he was in the police for 4 years. So, yes, he was maybe younger, but also 4 years is a long time. But you know, was he getting the right training? Look, I'm
that's
a big
a
believer. I'm a big believer that police need to be trained and trained and trained. They carry guns. Now, a lot of you know my view of guns. Guns are for killing. And if you're carrying a gun, you should know what you're doing. You should train. If you're a civilian, you should get training. You should know how to use it. You should go practice. You should think about what situations you would use it in and what not. You should really mentally be prepared for a situation where you have to use a gun. And so even as just a civilian who's not out there carrying every day and in the line of fire, you need to take responsibility for that gun. You need to take responsibility for how you use it. You need to train. I mean, I have a gun, and I haven't trained enough, and it worries me to death because I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to use it when it's not appropriate. And I just recently have not had the kind of time to go out there and shoot and train myself and really think about this. So I'm not, you know, I won't say, but I worry about it, right? I worry about it. And I think everybody should worry about it. And if you own a gun out there, train. Now, look, I was in the Israeli army, so I've already shot guns. So I know something about guns, but I know enough about guns to know that I need to train myself, that this is just having a gun is not enough. So now take that to policemen. The police are there to protect us. They need to be trained constantly about non-lethal use of force, using the gun as a last resort, just like I believe the death penalty is kind of a last resort. You don't want to, even a death penalty in a trial, you don't want to execute somebody who's innocent, and mistakes can be made. Certainly in the field, mistakes can be made. Shooting somebody fatally, and you only shoot somebody to kill, right? You don't shoot people to injure. That's ridiculous. So if you're going to use a gun, you're using it to kill. You only want to kill when your life is in danger. So the standards by which police should be using lethal force should be very high. The standards, police should be trained constantly about non-lethal ways to defuse a situation. The police, we shouldn't assume this is not war. This is policing, and most police situations can be dealt without drawing and firing a weapon. And, you know, whether it's tasers, whether it's other ways, whether it's, you know, whatever mechanisms, I'm not against police shooting, but it needs to be truly a last resort. And when the policeman feels that somebody's life is in danger, either his own or somebody around him. So I don't know. I don't know if that's the standard today in the police forces. It's hard for me to tell. I haven't done enough research to tell. I will say this, from everything I read, it seems like one of the great tragedies here is it seems like the Dallas police force, is probably the best trained in non-lethal use of force. They had put in reform programs. They are one of the most respected police forces in the country. They have very few complaints against police in Dallas, particularly recently. They used to have very high levels of complaints. Those levels of complaints are plummeted down. So it, actually, the Dallas police, the ones who were brutally murdered by this guy, are among the best police forces when it comes to abusing, you know, the minimizing complaints about abuse. So what a tragedy. I mean, it's just horrific that somebody could do something like this. Yeah,
do you think part of it, though, is don't police officers have a certain amount of quotas for, like, women and, you know, minorities and so forth? And they have to, like, so when they have to have quotas for people, they're not always going to get the best people. So, you know, some of these cops, you know, they might
well,
be fat,
I mean, that's
like,
that,
they might be,
yeah, I mean, that's probably
you know,
true in every
strong
profession. Yeah, because the quotas exist everywhere.
Yeah, but when you're talking about that you can kill somebody, you know.
Yeah, but let's think about this. I mean, it's not clear to me that black policemen kill more frequently than Hispanic policemen or than white policemen. Indeed, most of the incidences that we've seen out there have been white policemen killing blacks. Now, I don't know statistically. I had a graph before, but it's gone, about who kills whom more often. But the point is, if it was affirmative action, then you would see, if that's the cause, you would see black policemen killing white people, you know, if it was all based on that kind of stuff, or black policemen just killing more people generally. And I don't think there's any evidence of that. But again, the statistics, there's very few statistics about police shootings that are legit. There's no federal database of these shootings, and the local databases are not very good and not very reliable. So there's multiple different people trying to get this data, and it's very difficult to get. You know, again, I'll just go to Dallas again. And thanks, Corey. I've got a bunch of other calls, so I'm going to cut
you
off.
Okay, yeah, thank
you. Oh, thanks for calling.
Great job at Ocon.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming to Ocon. I mean, one of the things about Dallas police, again, is that Dallas police were marching with the protesters. There was no visible antagonism between the protesters and the police. The police were there to protect the protest. It's pretty amazing. I saw a statement, and again, my computer crashed just before the show, so a lot of my links I had ready and quotes I had ready are gone. But the Dallas police chief seems to be extraordinary police officer. The Dallas police chief was out there saying, look, the job of the Dallas police, the job of the police are to protect your right to free speech, to free assembly, to your property rights. I mean, he really made kind of a constitutional case for why the Dallas police was protecting the demonstrators. Oh, he talked about explicitly about the right to free speech, and that's something the Dallas police explicitly protect. So from everything I've read, I have a huge amount of admiration for the chief of police of Dallas and the Dallas police force generally. And it seems like they're well-trained and so on. Now, somebody's asking, what does it mean to have non-lethal use of force? Well, first, it could mean just talking, right? A lot of these cases, you can, if somebody's not actually has a gun, they don't even have a weapon and they've been shot. Or if they have a knife, can you tase them? Can you do something else? I'm not against shooting. If somebody's coming at you, if somebody's got a gun, if somebody's clearly threatening your life or somebody else's life, shoot him. A guy in a car who hasn't even drawn his gun and is reaching for his wallet doesn't strike me as a threat to your life. I've seen lots of videos of cases in which the policeman shoots the guy and then shoots him 11 more times just to make sure he's down when he's fairly far away and the guy's already down from the first shot. So, look, I'm not going to take the Black Lives Matter side here, but I don't think you can say that the only option is to shoot people. Or when a guy is not drawn or is reaching for a wallet and you just shoot, this. You cannot just assume, particularly at a traffic stop, right? The guy hasn't committed a violent crime. You're not chasing him down the street. He's just sitting in his car, and we'll see what the evidence is about what happened in New Orleans. Now, there might be other circumstances in Minnesota, but I'm just saying, based on the evidence we have so far, there are lots of things they could have done. And again, if the guy wasn't drawing a gun, he wasn't a threat to you. He was reaching for his wallet. Now, maybe he was drawing a gun. Maybe that's what will come out in the evidence, but it's not clear. It's not clear. Well, police is an incredibly difficult job. So I'm not diminishing that fact. That's why they need to be trained. They need to be trained. They need to be trained. That's their profession. And their profession is not to jump the gun, right? Their profession is not to shoot before knowing what's going on. Their job is to protect, and to protect themselves and to protect the people around them, to protect us. But they have to be responsible doing that. Yeah, I mean, they could protect us by you know, having a tank on every corner. But that would be ridiculous, right? Nobody expects them to be infallible. Nobody expects them to be, but, you know, if they make a mistake, they have to suffer the consequences of their mistakes. But also expect them to be really, really good and really, really well trained. And I think some police forces, it looks like Dallas, they've done that. And other police forces have not, right? So you have to hold them accountable in any case. You have to evaluate. You have to, and this is what a court of law will ultimately do, you have to go by the rule of law. It's certainly none of this excuses shooting policemen. But it also doesn't accuse saying, well, anything police do is okay. Anything policemen do is fine. Police have a pass. Of course they can't have a pass. That would be ridiculous. That would be giving up your rights completely to the government. Anything the government does is okay. Everything the government does is fine. The police are an arm of government. Corruption in the police is unfortunately exists just like it does corruption in government. And indeed, the bigger the government grows, and this goes back to Corey's point, the more laws there are, the more corrupt laws there are, the more victimless crimes they have to prosecute, the more corrupt the police are going to get, the less focused on defending us they're going to be, the less diligent they're going to be in their training about the use of force. So police have to be monitored. They have to be supervised. They have to be evaluated constantly because they use guns. And this applies to military as well. All right. We've got another caller here. Hi, you're on the Yaron Brook Show. Who's this?
Good afternoon, Dr. Brook. This is Skyler calling from Delaware.
Hey, Skyler, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Good, good. What's up?
I want to know the validity of the hypothesis which proposes that legal abortion reduces crime.
I don't know about the validity. There's clearly a correlation, and this is from Freakonomics, right?
Yes, absolutely. Donahue-Levitt hypothesis.
Yeah, and he presents
co-author of the book, Stephen Levitt.
Yes, yeah, Stephen Levitt, and he presents a hypothesis about it that I can't rule out, but I'm not an expert on the field. So what he says is, once abortion was legalized in 1971 or 72, I think, fewer unwanted babies were born. And then the second hypothesis is unborn. Well, the first is a fact, right? Once you legalize abortions, fewer unwanted babies are born. Second, you've got a hypothesis. Unborn children are more likely to commit crime. Not unborn children. Jesus. I'm a little tired today. I apologize.
It's okay. We're following you.
Unwanted children are more likely to commit crimes than otherwise. Unwanted children are more likely to commit criminals because they're neglected by their parents. They're treated badly by their parents. They're more likely to be abused. So in the 1960s and 70s, there were a lot of unwanted children. And there's a whole other thing going on here about single family parenting and out of wedlock births that's going on, particularly, unfortunately, in the Black community. So unwanted children commit more crimes. If you reduce the number of unwanted children, you reduce the amount of crime. So I can't rule out that hypothesis offhand. Indeed, during the 1990, when those children would have been 18, born in 1972, and let's assume that now they were aborted instead, crime starts going down. So it's viable. Levitt is not an idiot. He presents a viable hypothesis. I don't think he's proved it. I don't think he has a basis to prove it. But, you know, I can't rule it out. I know Liwan on the chat thinks it's junk, but Liwan doesn't always think things through. So, I mean, here it is, right? There is a high connection between children. There clearly is a high connection between children who are raised in one parent families in poverty and crime rates. That connection exists.
Absolutely.
So, if you reduce the number of unwanted children in that context, then and a reduction in crime follows, that is viable, and so I don't rule it out. So, all right, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. There's a lot of stuff going on with the reduction in crime. It's hard to unpackage what is right and what is wrong, what works and what doesn't work. And so on. Criminals get no sympathy because they're poor. It's no sympathy because they are born in one parent family. It's still, at the end of the day, an issue of choice. But the fact that they are neglected or abused as children places them at a massive disadvantage, and is a It's not a good thing to have children who are being abused. It's not a good thing to have lots of children who are unwanted. Nothing good comes of that. Nothing good comes of that. So, you know, let me put it this way. There is no definitive study that I know of that explains the reduction of crime after 1990-92. There were a lot of explanations. Different hypotheses, but there's no definitive explanation. And you know, again, Levitt is no idiot, and he knows the difference between statistical correlation and causation. He's presenting a hypothesis. It might be right. It might be wrong. I don't have enough evidence to say one way or the other. It could be one of the contributing factors. There's no doubt in my mind. Absolutely no doubt in my mind. The reducing the number of unwanted children, that is, that allowing women to have the choice to abort children, fetuses that they don't want, is a good thing. And does it have benefits in terms of crime? I wouldn't be surprised at all. Does it have benefits in terms of a lot of other things? I wouldn't be surprised at all. It's not healthy to have a society full of children whose mothers don't want them. That's a reality. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Skyla. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Calling. All right.
Absolutely.
Let's go. We got a bunch of calls today. This must be a topic of that really interests you guys. So let's take this call. Hi, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Hi, Yaron. This is Dave from Portland.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Great.
Good to see you last week at
OCON.
Yeah, it was good to see you there.
Likewise. Awesome. I wonder if I might just provide a concrete example of my personal experience with the police.
Yeah, go ahead. What's that?
I have some friends that are police officers, and I just want to underline, and I think it isn't put out there as much sometimes, but I think you said it. It's a hard job. And I have had the police help me up in a managerial positions and whatnot where,
yep,
you know, violence could have ensued regarding the property as well as person. And I found them to be very professional, very beneficial. And if they didn't show up, I would have had to have done something. And, I would not want to be in that position, but yet I was going to protect the property either way. And, you know, it is not an easy job. For example, I've talked about the use of force continuum. I think that subject has come up. And a lot of the policies are very good, but at the same time, there are some that are hampering. And I could look up some specific procedures, absolutely, if that is a topic of interest, if you think we might be talking about it again sometime. But,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure we will. This seems to be a big issue. And look, let me be very clear. I have a huge admiration for the police. I think they do a fantastic job under a huge amount of pressure. It is a difficult, hard job. They're dealing with deadly force, which is always very, very difficult. But this is why I'm emphasizing that because it is so difficult, because it's such a tough job, because they're dealing with deadly force, training is crucial. And just slapping a badge on somebody and sending him out here is wrong. It's wrong for him, for that person, and it's also wrong for the community in which they're policing. And look, I'm not saying anybody does that. There's all kinds of training and so on. But I think I mentioned again that the Dallas police have seemed to have done a phenomenal job. Crime rates in Dallas are down dramatically, again, as they are in most of the country. So policing has gotten better over the last 20 years, and crime rates have gone down dramatically over the last 20, 30 years. And they are better trained to deal with, people who are crazy. A lot of times what the police are encountering is mentally ill people. They're better equipped and better to dealing with people who just lost it emotionally, that are just yelling and out of control emotionally. And a lot of policing has to do with domestic disputes, and a lot of crime has to do with domestic disputes, unfortunately. And they're very good at dealing with those kind of situations, and they need to, and they're better trained in dealing with people who are crazy out there with a gun or maybe not, but even police who do traffic stops need to be properly trained in how to deal with identifying real threats and knowing when they're threatened and dealing with them. And it's absurd. It's absurd to ask a question like, how could training help? Well, in anything in life, training helps. In anything in life. And the more complex the job, the more you need to be trained. And, of course, policing is incredibly complex, incredibly dangerous, incredibly requiring incredibly courageous activity. And training needs to be engaged in. You need to train soldiers intently, constantly, all the time. And you need to train police and how to deal with people. It is not obvious how to deal with people. I mean, it's nice in our westerns that we see the sheriff going out there and, you know, everything lands up in a duel at high noon and the sheriff always wins. But that's not reality. And it's good that it's not reality, because crime rates today are far, far lower than they were in the Wild West. We wouldn't want to live in terms of crime in what the Wild West was. And we wouldn't want to live in a place where the police abused their power in ways that they probably did back then. So, you know, and I think, and so again, I'm a huge admirer of the police up to a point. But they need massive amounts of training. Now, let me also say, and I know you didn't call about this, but let me also say that I worry about the police, because here they are. Most of the crimes they have to deal with are victimless crimes. Corey talked about all these laws that we have in our books, starting with a variety of traffic laws that they have to uphold, but all kinds of laws that are non-objective, completely non-objective. And then you have laws drug laws, a war on drugs, as if it's possible to have a war on drugs. The period in which policemen were most, there was most police, most violence against police, the peak of violence against police, where police were being shot constantly. Do you know what period that was?
No.
It was during Prohibition. So by far, the era of the most violence against police was during Prohibition. What's the second most violent period? The second most violent period was the period right after the war on drugs was launched. And then the number of police dying on the job, had a peak. It declined dramatically once Prohibition was lost. and it then declined in the 1990s. I'm not sure exactly why, right? So you have all these big, you have all these laws on drugs, and policemen are afraid, so they're much more likely to shoot, right? So I worry about police. I also think police corruption is more extensive. We've seen police departments all over the country in which the police are unbelievably corrupt. We saw that here in Orange County in California, where they were, doing things, horrible things, and particularly the sheriff's department and elsewhere. So there's a lot of corruption, and I think that has to do with the fact that police have to engage in a war on drugs, whatever the hell that means, and in a lot of non-objective, enforcing laws that are non-objective and not involved in protecting individual rights. And I think that's corrupting, and that's hampering, and I think that leads to more bad policing. So they don't do the good stuff. They don't do the right stuff. In spite of all of that, I still have an immense respect for them, and they are fundamentally the good guys. I'm not an anti-police anarchist, but when they are these things, when you see them beating up people that it's not always understood why they're beating them up, when they're shooting people where they don't seem to be bad guys, we have to investigate, and we have to evaluate it objectively, and we have to be willing to go after the police. And look, I believe, do you mind if I let's take this offline? Do you have
sure,
another comment?
Sure,
another
thank
question?
You, Ron.
Okay, because let me get into this other topic, and then I've got another couple of calls. I'll take these other calls. Look, racism is real. Racism against blacks in America is a historical phenomenon that existed for a very long time. To try to whitewash racism in America is a travesty. Racism has been here for a long, long time, and there's no evidence that it's disappeared. There is racism in America, and we have to acknowledge that. And the police, in our history, the police has been involved in racial lynchings and racial hatred. If you go back to the South, pre-70s South, in the 60s and the 50s and the 40s and the 30s, all the way back to the age of slavery, the police have been involved with slavery, with the racism. I mean, the history of the South, and often of the North, where there were lynchings as well, has been horrific. You know, I've traveled through all parts of this country. Racism is alive and well. Racism is alive and well. I mean, just think about that guy who walked into Charleston Church and just shot up a bunch of parishioners because they were black. And there's a whole movement out there that supported him. There was the whole issue of the Confederate flag. Look, the Confederate flag is a symbol of racism. It's a symbol of slavery. I don't care if that's why you, that is the symbol. That is objectively what it means. You might have some nostalgia around it. That's not what the flag means. It means slavery. It means racism. And for the government to fly a flag like that, and for people to support the government flying like that, I think it's horrific. I think it's horrific. I travel all over the South, and slavery does exist. Now, I'm sure it's slavery. See, today I'm tired, so my words, the right words are not coming. Racism exists today. It might not exist. It certainly doesn't exist on the scale it did 30, 40 years ago. But it exists. Now, is there racism against whites by blacks? Absolutely it exists. As well, racism generally exists out there. I mean, if anything, what the Trump campaign has shown, that there's plenty of racism in the United States today, and it's not just against whites. Right? We're not going to get to the right point in this country unless we objectivists are willing to be objective. We're willing to be objective. And there is racism all over this country, and Trump brings out the many racists that exist out there. And you know, the fact that Trump talks about ethnic origin, the fact that he talks about Hispanics constantly, the fact that he talks in racial terms, and whether he's a racist or not, emboldens people out there to be racist. Emboldens people out there to be racist. And yeah, I don't know that Trump's a racist. He probably isn't, but he's playing on it. He's playing on it, and he's encouraging you. He's encouraging you. And don't give me this nonsense about Hispanic is not a race. Neither is Jewish. There's still anti-Semitism. We still call that racism. So racism is really, really out there. And look, there's been plenty of studies that show that generally the population is more suspicious of blacks than they are of whites. And maybe there's a good reason for that, because more crimes are committed by blacks than they are by whites. Although there are more crimes committed against whites by whites than there are crimes committed against whites by blacks. Most crimes committed by blacks are against blacks. But yet, white people fear blacks. You see that in study after study after study. And it's instinctual. It's not something you control. You can be a non-racist, but you will have a negative response to seeing somebody black up coming across the street from you than somebody white. It's just an emotional response that a lot of us have. And policemen have it too. And this is where they need to be trained, because it's their job not to let any kind of implicit bias that they might have enter into their decision making. They have a much higher burden to deal with whatever discrimination they have internalized, whatever racial biases they might have internalized. And again, most of us do to some extent. Whatever they have internalized, they need to examine those. And this is where, again, you can train. Sometimes all the training involves is by making real that you have the bias. Then you can treat it objectively. You can think about it, and you can undo the negative emotion. But unless you're willing to recognize that you have the bias, you're not going to be able to deal with it. So what you need is training, 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 and the right training. And we need to hold police to the highest standards possible, the highest standards possible. And look, the existence of racism in America is not up for question. It exists. And I've seen it, and I've talked to people about it. It's less than it was 30 years ago. I traveled through the United States. I hitchhiked through the United States in 1979. One of these shows, we'll do a hitchhiking story show. And then the amount of anti-Semitism and the amount of racism I encountered in 1979 in America was unbelievably shocking. Shocking. But it was real. Now, it's better today than 1979, but it's still out there. And yes, Atlanta has a black mayor. The chief of police in Dallas is black. That's great. And we've come a long, long way. We've come a long, long way. And President Obama is black. We've come a long, long way. But to say, you should see my Twitter feed sometime. If you think there's no racism in America, you should see the white supremacists attacking me on my Twitter feed when I recommend something like the movie Race, which I think is an excellent movie. An interesting movie, if nothing else. The kind of vitriol, actually, on this chat sometimes that we get from white supremacists. Right? So maybe it's a biased sample because I get more of the racists coming out to attack me than normal. But it's there. Look, all I'm saying is I admire police. I respect them. I would defend them. But I fear that they don't get the kind of training they need to get, and they don't get enough of it. And some of this so-called sensitivity training is not a bad thing when it comes to police. Anybody carrying a gun needs to be trained in what truly is a life-threatening situation. When do you use the gun? Practice, practice, practice. The idea that we all know instinctually when somebody is threatening our life is BS. Complete and utter bullshit. Complete and utter bullshit. There are many situations that you might fear that somebody's threatening you and they're not. You need to know, and there are objective ways in which to be able to tell. Now, I think one of the problems in our society is that we have racism on the increase, in my view. And the reason we have racism on the increase, in my view, is that race has been made an issue coming out of the 1960s. So we had racism pre-1960s, massive racism. And instead of taking Martin Luther King's word for it, and instead of trying to create a colorblind society, which is what we should be have done, a great opportunity for it, which is what the civil rights under Martin Luther King supposedly stood for, we turned this into the reverse racism. Affirmative action, quotas, all this nonsense, measuring everything in terms of black and white and so on. And that has sustained racism. It has sustained racism. Now, it's some in some areas, I think among the middle class and maybe professionals, racism has declined dramatically because now we interact more with blacks and others. But there's also real resentment out there towards racism. So anyway, what we want, what we need is a colorblind society. I don't think, unfortunately, these days anybody wants it. Clearly, the left doesn't want it. But that's what we need. And I know a lot of whites who don't want a colorblind society. And I agree that many, many, many blacks, most all of the black leadership doesn't want a colorblind society. And that is a massive tragedy. That is the fault of the left and the right. And it's the fault of the change in the civil, it's a civil rights movement, which has emphasized not color blindness, but color sensitivity. All these leftist newbies who want to encourage racism. Okay, and let's take another call. And hey, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Naj in Atlanta. Yeah, indeed.
Hey, Naj, how are you?
I'm well. I've been listening for a little bit. I want to go back to a couple of callers ago. Somebody talked about affirmative action in policing. If you look at most precincts, matter of fact, you could probably pull up hundreds of precincts to where the rate is 90% white. And if you take that metric down to 80%, you get even more. So the idea that there's some kind of affirmative action program that's pushing people in, minority turnout to become policemen is actually very, very low. And there's a lot of people trying to encourage young people to go into it. But as of right now, like there's no affirmative action. And then that affirmative action word is so weighted now that I don't think people realize that it's actually the meaning of it is underrepresented groups. And it's listed as minority. Never said black, never said African-American. Like there's no special status for sure. Black people based on affirmative action. And if it was, you'd look at the unemployment rates and say, well, how does this work? So
sure.
we really got to get into detail with things sometimes because we've heard these words so often, just throw them out there, and we forget the meaning.
Yeah.
Second part.
Let me just address your first part. I promise I'll let you get back to the second part. Let me just address affirmative action. Look, I'm against affirmative action, no matter how you position it. And you're right. It's not just about blacks. It's about generally minorities. But affirmative action is categorizing people based on race and giving them and allowing them into jobs based on race. And I think that's racism. And I think it's wrong. And I think it was a huge mistake for the civil rights movements in the 1960s to allow for affirmative action. I'm a huge fan of Martin Luther King's speech when he said, the dream is a colorblind society, and you're not going to get to colorblindness as long as we keep talking about race this, race that, how many people of color or minorities are in this profession or that profession. As long as we continue on that path, we are institutionalizing racism into our legal system. And I think that is horrific. What we need to strive towards, and it's hard because racism is so much a part of the history of this country, tragically, is we need to keep working towards the model, the ideal of colorblindness, where we don't really care what color a person is or what racial background or what minority they belong to. If they're good for the job, hiring. If they're not good for the job, don't hire them.
No, indeed. But we also have to be specific about reality and not push things towards what we want them to be. So when we say
affirmative action, we need to realize what reality is.
Hold on, because I got to clear up that last point. When we say affirmative action, first time it was instituted was in Florida, talking to early, you know, about 40 years ago, talking about Florida. Do you know which group is actually represented most by affirmative action across this country through universities, through jobs, and everything else that affirmative action actually applies to? It's white women, because they're listed as a minority. So once
Black people get
the backlash of this, but not the benefits of it. And then when you have this discussion, people think you're talking about black folks. Like, no, we have almost recession-level unemployment rate, and people think we out here getting a leg up. Now, as far as race, people think it's on a forward arc and eventually we'll just get better. It's like, no, race is ebbs and flows, and economic downturns usually means there's going to be more racial tension. And right now, or in the whole Obama administration, might as well say, there's been an economic downturn. So there's a lot of white people who are looked at as white but are barely getting by doing 40 hours a week, and people are talking about white privilege to them, and they're mad as hell. So, you know, that part is understandable. But when people try to place the blame on this, the black folks, we look at them like, look, we ain't got your stuff, we ain't got your jobs, and we don't have your representation on the universities, as you look at the small percentage of black people who are on these colleges and universities. So this affirmative action thing's got to go. And then another thing, this whole Southern thing. The South is not more racist than the North. The South has more black people in it. You change the dynamics of the South and the North and put those higher percentages of populations in the North, and you'll find out some of these liberals are nowhere near as racially tolerant as they want you to believe. So that's based on that, because they can easily, through proximity, avoid black people that they don't feel they should be around. So they hang around black people of their social strata. The black people below them, they build highways to drive around their areas with tax money. So these racial things are really convoluted and hard to get to. The point about abortion you brought up, you nailed that on the head. That's a causation quagmire. There's really no way to get to that and really prime that out and say that's the main thing to hold up when you're talking about reduction of crime. Beautiful assessment by you. And the police part, I think what you're saying is great. Training all day. But I would put it secondary. I think the first part of it is raising the bar on who gets in, who gets to put that badge
in.
I think it has to be Marine levels of aptitude, intelligence, courage, brave. Like, I think you have to raise the bar so high to where people of a certain background and status and the way they carry themselves and the way they would act in a serious event, they just can't cut the mustard. You don't let them in. A Marine there or a Marine level training, that person has a certain integrity and pride about who he is and what he's accomplished. And he would take, I think he would take the badge more seriously from the point of being more judicious. Can I just get this one in?
Absolutely. I'm loving the points you're making. I think you make some great points. Go ahead.
Appreciate it. Last point about crime rate, because this is one people love to say. Well, black people are only such and such percentage of the country, but they commit X amount of crime. Well, you brought it up, the war on drugs. Now, black people and white people use drugs at just about the same rate. There's really no difference as far as using drugs and people who actually need rehab. But black people are arrested at 6 times the rate of white people for drug possession and drug use. So you remove that out of the metric, and you see that black people produce just as many violent folks as white folks. Black people produce just as many crazy folks as white folks. There's no real difference. It's all social strata. But if you police one area more heavily than you do another, you'll have more statistics. You'll have more rates and higher rates. And then you'll be able to say, see, they're the problem. When all of these are really American problems that we refuse to actually tackle, and we look for the group to blame. Same thing with education. When we talk about black test scores, we always measure the worst of the black urban areas against the best of other areas and say, look, these kids are behind. Well, if we measure the best of American schools against the world, we find out we're still in the middle of the pack. So that's an American problem, but since we don't want to solve it, we'll just talk about those ghetto kids over there with the low test score. So
remind me what your name
American problems we refuse to touch. Oh, my name is
remind
not.
Me, Nudge, thanks for calling. I hope you continue listening to the show. I really enjoyed your comments. That was great. Look, I agree with a lot of what Nudge said. And I think the big problem in this country, the big problem of racism, is that we continue to think in terms of race. We continue to measure in terms of race. Education and you know, all these things, a lot of that has to do with public education, with the quality of public education, particularly in the inner cities, where blacks are disproportionately represented. People talk about, crime rates and so on. The war on drugs, is one of the most horrific things. And the victims of a war on drugs are, the policemen who are now have to enforce laws that are unjust, that are wrong, that open them up to corruption and open up to them having to do things that they wouldn't, that a rational, good person would not do. The war on drugs, the victims of the war on drugs are the neighborhoods in which the gangs take over and the innocent people who got shot and get killed. And again, those are disproportionately minority neighborhoods, and they get, you know, the violence is horrific, and you get into this war between the police and the drug cartels and the drug gangs. But if we didn't have a war, if we didn't have drugs, crime in this country would decline by a lot, even today. And beyond that, you know, the fact is that today, I mean, the whole issue of racism is so frigging disgusting. It is so disgusting. The idea of race is disgusting. The idea that it matters what race is disgusting. And the fact is that we're all mutts anyway. I mean, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's lost any meaning. You know, the amount of people who have genes from all kind of races is ridiculous. I mean, it just blows my mind that people care about race one way or the other. It really does blow my mind. What's the point? So I'll tell you a personal story. And this is not about racism, but this is about in America, race matters so much. Race matters so much. So when my first son was born at a hospital in Austin, Texas, a nurse came into the room, and she, a black nurse, not that it matters, but a black nurse comes in and she's filling out the form for a birth certificate. So she wants to know the name of the baby. She wants to know, you know, our names and all the, you know, the address and all that information. And then she gets to, she asks me, what race is the baby? Literally, your birth certificate has a field for race. I mean, I can't think of anything more stupid and ridiculous than that. So I said to her, what are we, a Nazi Germany? Because I associate racial characterizations, racial categories with the Nazis, not with America. How come in America on the birth certificate it says race? And she said, look, if you don't give us a race, I can't fill out the birth certificate. So I said, you know, basically, we made something up, I told her, you put in whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, what race are my babies? I don't know what race my babies are. I mean, I have, their origins are in Asia, Central Asia, Northern Africa, Northern Europe. And if you look at my genetic makeup, you know, maybe, you know, Siberia. I mean, it's ridiculous. The whole thing is frigging ridiculous. There is no such thing. And yet on the birth certificate in America. That's absurd. Absurd. It's none of the government's business where my ancestors come from. It's irrelevant to anything. If it's relevant to my health history, I'll tell it to my doctor. The government has no responsibility. They don't ask you what blood type you have, but they ask you what race you are. Okay. All right. We got one more One more caller here. Hi, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this? Ooh, I can barely hear you. Is there any way you can get close to the mic? I really can't hear you.
Hi, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this?
That's better. Are you there?
Ooh, I can barely hear you. Is there any way you can get close to the mic?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, and there's feedback, and I can hear myself in the background. So turn off whatever you're listening to and try to speak. Hello, you there?
I can't hear you, and there's feedback, and I can hear myself.
All right, the caller from area code 425, hang up and try again. We can try again one more time, but I couldn't hear what you said. So, you know, that's just sorry about that, but I couldn't hear you at all. All right, so we've gone all kinds of directions, but let me be very clear. Identifying based on race, identifying people based on race, treating people in one way or another based on race, I find despicable. Ayn Rand called the most primitive form of collectivism, and I think you know what Ayn Rand thought of collectivism. She thought it was evil. So it's meaningless. We shouldn't be talking about it, right? But we have to. And the only reason we have to is because it's out there, because there is racism. And we have to recognize that there is racism, and we have to fight it. But you don't fight it by being a racist. You fight it by trying to be as colorblind as you can possibly be. Okay, I'm going to try to take the 425 call again and see if we have any better luck. Hi, you're on the Yaron Brooks Show. Who's this?
Hi, this is Anna. I'm calling from Dallas.
Hey, Anna. I can finally hear you. That's great. Go ahead.
I wanted to speak to the relations that the police tend to have with the communities that they are supposedly protecting.
Yep.
I'm not originally from Dallas, but my boyfriend is. He grew up here his whole life, and he is Black. And just listening to him recount stories and encounters that he had, I mean, it makes my heart drop. One in particular that I wanted to share with you, he was parked outside of Silver, probably illegally. He was probably in a handicapped spot or a fire lane or something like that. But a cop came up to him and pulled a gun on him because he was illegally parked.
Yep, yep.
I don't believe that would happen to a white person at all. And there's another instance that actually happened in Arizona. We were driving, he was driving, and in Texas, if somebody is pulled over on, you know, on the side of the road, you're not supposed to pass them. You know, you're supposed to get over into the other lane. And so he got over into the other lane quickly, and we ended up getting pulled over for that. Not only did we get pulled over, but they separated us. They left me in the car. They asked me to step out, and separately they interrogated us about where we were going, what we were doing.
And
if I was driving with a white man, I know that would not have happened. I feel like you can't really go ahead.
Sadly, I agree with you. I think these things do happen. I mean, I've had experiences. I've had experience firsthand where I've seen that happen, whether it's against Blacks or Hispanics. I think, you know, there's a bias, just like there's a bias and there's an element of racism in the general population that bleeds into the police force. And this is, again, why I think that the police forces, and from the statistics I've seen, Dallas does a better job than other police forces do, but that's not to say they're perfect, but there is, they need to, and there's a tendency for cops to take their gun out, but that's ridiculous. Violence against cops pre-Dallas, so put aside Dallas, I don't know the statistics post-Dallas, pre-Dallas, at the lowest they've been in per million in a population, they're the lowest they've ever been since statistics have been done, which goes back to the beginning of the 20th century. So I think a lot of this about, about the war on cops, cops are dropping, like, you know, being killed. It's just the statistics just don't pan it out. There's a verbal war on cops. But there's no real one. Cops drawing a gun over a parking violation, over a traffic violation, is absolutely absurd. And a gun is not just a gun. A gun is a means of destruction. It is a means of violence. And I don't want, as a citizen, I don't want to see my police drawing guns on me because I'm parked in the wrong place or because I'm moving lanes in the wrong direction. Thanks for calling. I really appreciate it. I hope you continue listening to your show. You're listening to your Ron Brooks show here. And I'm on every Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time on Blog Talk Radio. And I hope many of you first-time callers, it seems like the first-time listeners quite a bit here today. I hope you continue listening. Look, this is an uncomfortable topic, and it's a confusing topic, and it's a misunderstood topic. And it's hard to talk about. And people resist the idea that they might be biased or they might be biased out there. But there is. There is. And I'm sorry. You do not draw a gun unless you believe your life is endangered. You do not draw a gun unless you believe your life is endangered. Somebody sitting in a car is not endangering your life. And it's a travesty. And it saddens me unbelievably to hear stories like this. Because again, I defend the police. I like the police. I want the police. I want the police out there defending my rights. For the most part, I live in an unbelievably safe place today because of policing. And I would say that today, the level of violent crime in America is at its lowest it's been in 30 years and one of the lowest points in its history. And a lot of that has to do with good policing. So we have to recognize that violent crime is at a very, very, very low point. Now, let me get to one more caller, and then we'll end with some other statistics. Hi, you're on Brook Show.
You know, I was listening to your conversation. And I'm
going
to hit
name?
On two things, hey. Affirmative action. My name is Pianki. I'm calling from the Midwest.
Hey, Pianki.
Affirmative action is nothing wrong with it. Affirmative action is good. Affirmative action was put in place because African Americans were denied things because of their quote-unquote ethnicity. I don't use the word race. It's only one
good.
Race, and that's human races. Ethnicity.
Good for you. Good for you.
And affirmative action is necessary. I think we use it in the wrong place. I think it should be used in economics also, along with the areas where it has been used.
Yeah.
And the United States is what it is. Race, as you use the word, and I'm going to use it in, you know, in my conversation, plays a major part in this country. The amount of entitlement, the allocation, and so, it's not going
to,
because it's money. It's money associated with.
This is what Martin Luther King.
Well, I don't care
right?
about what Martin Luther King. I'm an African American. I like it for it to be there. And let me give you another point.
Yep.
When we have construction projects in the area to have those goals in there, because whites will not hire qualified drug tested black workers. We had that problem just recently with a Mississippi River bridge that spanned between St. Louis and East St. Louis. So we had to. Put those goal percentages in place. And it's necessary, and it has to stay there until at what point in time things change. As far as the police is concerned, one of the problems is that when you have a majority black community, the police department, and not only the police department, because police department is nothing more than public works, police officers are employees, their employers are the people of the community that they work for. That police department, as well as the fire department, should reflect the population that it serves. Yeah. If you got an 80% black population, well, the police department should reflect that. The fire department should reflect that. You shouldn't have white police officers coming from miles around into a black community, whereas blacks can't do that in reverse.
I'm going to have to cut you off only because I'm running out of time here. But I really
I'm sorry.
Yep. No problem. Look, all of that is racism. All of that is racism. You know, when you say only blacks can police blacks, that's racism. Only one ethnic group can police the other ethnic group, that's racism. That's just wrong. What we need to strive towards, and we're not going to get there unless we start talking about it today, unless we start believing in it today. is for a colorblind society. Now, if a white policeman abuses somebody who's black, or abuses somebody who's white, or abuses somebody who's green, that black policeman needs to be prosecuted. We need strong laws that protect us against police abuse. And police abuse is worse crime against us by a criminal, because the police are there to protect us. So it's a massive violation. It's a massive violation of who we are, what we are, and what they are there in order to do. So the definition of racism is treating people based on their race, based on their ethnicity. Ethnicity, race, who cares, right? That's racism. Evaluating people, not based on their moral character, but based on their race. That's racism. Hiring blacks because they're black is racism. Hiring whites because they're whites is racism. Hiring Chinese because they're Chinese was racism. But the opposite is true as well. Not hiring a black who's qualified because he's black is racism. Not hiring a white because he's qualified because he's white is racism. Those are all racists. You need to treat people as individuals, and their color of their skin is irrelevant. Is irrelevant. And the idea that if your community is 80% black, you have to have 80% police, that's racism. That's racism. Because you're treating people based on their race. It should you, what you should do is in a community, you should hire the best, most qualified. I like that idea of the police being trained like Marines. Best qualified, highly qualified. People with the best judgment who can evaluate situations best so they make the fewest mistakes possible. I don't care if they're black, green, yellow, blue. What relevance is it? What you want is in the same school district, in the same district, what you want is highly qualified policemen. And part of the qualification of being a policeman should be to evaluate the situation objectively and not let race be a factor, unless race is objectively a factor. Somebody calls you up. Somebody calls the police and said, I was just mugged by a black person or a green person or a yellow person or a white person. Then the police are looking for a black, green, yellow, or white person. Then it's okay to use race in evaluating who you stop and who you're looking for. But it has to be objective. There has to be a reason. Otherwise, it is racism. And I know from personal experience, and I know from traveling around this country, that there is racism in this country. And I've seen some of these police shootings. And maybe you can show me some videos of equivalent police shootings of black of white people. But some of these police shootings are ridiculous. Some of these police shootings are unjustified. Now, maybe it has nothing to do with race. Maybe they would shoot the white person as well in the same way. But I have seen no evidence of that. So now I'm not saying it's systemic. I'm not saying all police, certainly I'm not saying all police officers are like this, but some are, and that needs to be dealt with objectively. I'm here for objectivity, being objective about this issue. All right. I'm actually going to take a really quick break here. No, well, let's not take a break. What the hell? All right. Here's some facts that we talked about that I think are really important for everybody. And somebody's asking on the chat whether I can get Leonard Peikoff on the show. Probably not. Leonard doesn't want to do more than the podcast that he does. It's just he's 83 years old and this is not what he wants to do. Unfortunately, I don't have a movie recommendation for you guys this time. Although there's one that's in my mind that I'd like to recommend about a cop in the South, but the name is escaping me. So I'll pick it up next week and give you some movie recommendations, maybe related to the topic we just discussed, related to the topic of racism and maybe police. There's some really good movies that relate to this. I recommended two weeks ago Amistad. I definitely recommend you watch Amistad. And let's do this. I just watched this movie in the theater. What was the movie called? Something State of Jones. State of Jones. State of Jones. Not a great movie, but an interesting movie. Fascinating movie. Fascinating movie. So I would recommend you watch State of Jones, and partially fascinating because it gives you kind of a history of racism in the South, going back to slavery. But what happened? Free State of Jones. That's what it is. Free State of Jones. So what happened even post-slavery, after emancipation? And it's just horrific. It's horrific. And we have to acknowledge this. The way particularly blacks were treated in this country up until at least the 1960s and to some extent to this day is horrific. It's really disgusting. And we have to acknowledge that as people who strive to be objective and facts-oriented. I mean, it shocks me every time I read about the discrimination in the South during the 50s and 60s. It horrifies me when I watch movies like Free State of Jones, how Americans could be so horrific, how the Ku Klux Klan could just exist in the South for decades. It is really, really horrific. The history of race in this country is a history that is really, truly disgusting, even three generations ago. And it's three generations ago, but to some extent, some of these issues still reside here, still exist. They still exist. And you can see it in some of these police shootings, unfortunately. But look, what happened in Dallas is horrific. But again, put it in perspective, there are fewer police are being shot in the line of duty in 2015 per million in the population than any time in American history, pretty much. Even if you don't take out per million, it was one of the lowest rates in 50 years. Now, every police shooting is horrific. Every police shooting is, you know, should be condemned. You cannot take your law into your own hands. We need the rule of law in America. And, you know, this is a sign. This Dallas shooting, and there were actually a number of other police shootings on the same weekend for the, kind of the same reasons, is a sign of the complete breakdown of the rule of a breakdown in the rule of law. And if this isn't dealt with, this is really going to become horrific, really become horrific. There's nothing worse than you know, the breakdown of the rule of law. So to prevent it, we need to be objective about what's going on. We need to be real about what's going on. We need to realize there are problems and errors and mistakes out there, and we need to deal with them. We know there's a breakdown in the rule of law when it comes to our politicians. But when the breakdown and the people in power, the kind of what's called often the ruling elites, but when the breakdown in the rule of law comes into our streets, then we're really in big trouble. But again, let's put it in perspective. I like perspective, and I like statistics. We live in one of the least violent periods in human history. We live in one of the least violent periods in human history. All right. You've been listening to Iran Brooks Show. And I hope you listen again. If you're a first-time listener, I hope you catch us every Saturday, 11:30 to 1 o'clock Pacific time. And you can also download the show on Blog Talk Radio. You can also get it on iTunes. You can get it on pretty much any podcast app. It's uploaded into any podcast app. Yaron Brook, YaronBrook. Next time, we'll be talking about a lot of other interesting stuff. And I promise, I think somebody asked about the movie Crash. And the problem with the movie Crash is if I remember liking it, but I don't remember any particulars, and I will get to those particulars next time. So thanks for listening, talk to you next week.